TWAT Radio Episode 003, I Have an Anus.
Welcome to episode 3 of TWAT. Today your hosts are me, I'm DOSman.
And Droops.
Droops. And I think to start off here, I'm just going to drop right in and talk about some good old CPM. For those of you that did not play with the old 8-bit micros or some of that old hardware, CPM was the operating system of choice back then, created by Gary Kildall. I've got a collection of books that I acquired from a library, and one of them is the CPM Handbook. And I was noticing in the credits, or the acknowledgments, Dorothy Kildall, Visual Research, continuously supported this effort, yada yada yada. So this book has a lot of direct information from the Kildalls. It was kind of interesting. Not that anyone cares. I just thought it was interesting to see one of the CPM creators listed in there. So anyway, CPM basically looked and felt like DOS. If you're familiar with DOS, hopefully a lot of you are. A lot of the similar commands like DIR and stuff. Some of the other things were different. They had like ED and some things like that. Use pip to copy, which is like peripheral input, something or other. I don't remember what it stood for, but some of the other things that interested me about it were, there were a lot of different versions of it. Of course, at the 8-bit micro level, there were so many different systems that any different computer system pretty much had to be ported over from scratch. And there's actually a book that Digital Research sold. I don't remember if I mentioned it, but Gary Kildall founded Digital Research, better known for its DR-DOS. And had a book that would show you how to I don't know if it was actually just restructuring some of the binary in the CPM to use your new BIOS that you had in your micro, if it was one you made yourself, or if it was one that just never had CPM ported to it. But moving on, there are some of the other things that DR sold were NPM, which was actually a multi-user operating system for 8-bit micros, and you have multiple terminals hanging off one main system. And supposedly it was not very popular, and I really have never heard much mention of it online. I'm sure if I looked, I could probably find it, but I just see a lot of mention of it in this one book that I've got. Another one that they sold was CPNet, and you could have multi-users in one system. With CPNet, you could have multiple systems networked together and share peripherals, resources, and that was kind of interesting. I just learned about that tonight, doing a little study. Really all I had to talk about was CPM at the moment, other than it was pretty much there's a long and twisted story of how CPM sort of got turned into DOS and was used by IBM and Microsoft. And there's not a direct translation, there was sort of a copy that Bill Gates bought from someone else and sold to IBM, and Gary Kildall, I guess, was pretty upset for the longest time about that whole deal. For languishing in the shadows and not having any proper respect for what he created. But anyway, moving on to DOS. I just wanted to go over some cool little tricks and stuff that you used to be able to do once upon a time, things that I used to do and thought I was cool for it. There are other people that I guess figured these things out, and I definitely was not lead at all, but I thought I was. Of course, I think everyone out there at one time has hex edited their program and changed the text or the copyright of the software. And of course, with DOS, it was the debug program that lets you do that. Other things you could do with like the command.com program was change the internal commands. So instead of DIR, it was like RID or something. And it was cool to, if you had a computer system like, say, a school, it was fun to rename the internal command and then create a batch file with the name dir.bat, and it would, say, log the output anytime it was used, log the time and date, and then go ahead and call the new internal command. And you could do that with several different commands, you know, and have a good idea what people are doing on your terminal, you know, when they outside of class. And that was kind of fun. Not really all that useful and whatnot. But other things, strange things you could do, like changing the command processing order. Like normally DOS would search for any .com program by that name. Like say you had a program named print, and it was print.exe. Well, first, DOS would look in your current directory for print.com, then it would look for print.exe, then it would look for print.bat. And you could change that extension order and create some strange scenarios for people, other people using your system. Something else, one of my things I was really proud of that I figured out how to do, when my system would power up, it would have a short delay, and if nothing was typed, it would go ahead and boot on up into a false environment and present the user with a fake C drive. And the way that worked, there was a command called subst, S-U-B-S-T, and it would allow you to take, say, a subdirectory and create a drive letter out of it. So on my dos.rsvs.net site, that I created years ago in high school. I've got a little example of this under the secrets page, and I know I'm not Leap by any means for this page. I wrote this almost a decade ago, and there's a lot of stuff in there. I really wish I should rewrite it rather than let people read it anymore, but whatever. It's out there and available. And so anyway, you take, say, make a subdirectory in your C drive called, like, lockmin. Then you would run subs D colon and C colon in your path, and it would create a drive D out of that subdirectory. Well, there's another command that you had back then in DOS that would allow you to reassign drive letters. So it was called assign, and then, say, you assign the purpose of it was for programs and such so you could install them on your hard drive on the C drive, but they were only intended to be run off the A or B drive. They're floppy only. And you'd say assign A to C, and then your A drive would C to A, so that your program could be installed on your hard drive, but it would still think it's running on the A drive. Well, if you assigned your C drive to another letter like D, this subdirectory you've created, that would essentially make that subdirectory your root directory, and it would be similar to, like, say, the trut environments in your Unix or Linux operating systems, and you could create all kinds of subdirectories under there, or you could potentially even, I never tried this, I never thought of it at the time, there's another command called join that would take a drive letter and make it into a subdirectory. So you could actually put working stuff out there, potentially. I had not tried it, so I don't know for sure that it works, but I would assume that it would, since this other stuff I have worked. So anyway, that's how you would create a false environment. So if someone just booted up your old DOS system, it would go ahead and if they didn't press the right control sequence at the right time, it would go ahead and just boot up and lock them in the subdirectory. And so not all that Leap, but it was something I thought was really cool when I figured it out. So that's one of the things I just wanted to talk about and reminisce a little bit about. I think that's about all I really had on this for today, Droops.
Well, I had a couple things, except mine's more pertaining to the pseudo DOS that comes with Windows XP, your command prompt as it would be.
Mm-hmm.
When you open up DOS, when it works on DOS, this little bit does, And when you open up command prompt, it says, you know, copyright Microsoft, blah, 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 blah. If you run your command.com, which is your DOS, or cmd.exe, which is comes in XP, with the slash K at the end, the forward slash and then the letter K, it won't show that anymore. And that's kind of nice if you like, you know, your system looking real clean. When you're using, yeah, this works with long file names. I believe it works in DOS. I didn't try it. It works with command prompt. When you do long file names, use the quotes. You only have to use the first one. You don't have to use the second one, which I thought was kind of interesting. Let's see. Tab completion works with command prompt. If you do a little registry editing, you go to H key current user, software, Microsoft, and then command processor. And there's a registry key called complete, C-H-A-R, complete care, complete car. I don't know how to pronounce things. You set the value to 9. If it's not there, just create it. And then you have tab completion. So if you want to, you're in the C directory, you want to go to documents and settings, you just type DOC, and then you hit tab, and it does it for you. You can also multitask with some DOS, like you can with Linux, and I guess other operating systems. If you make a little batch file and put it in your Windows System 32 directory, something that it's looking for, and call it bg.bat, like background.bat. And inside it, you write the letter start, then you space, you do slash m, space command, slash c, and then, I'm saying a lot, I'm sorry everybody. Then you do a percent 1, percent 2, percent 3, all the way up to percent 9. When you go to run something, like if you want to unzip something, but you also want to work while it unzips, you just bg, space, and then the unzip command, hit enter. And it'll work in the background while you are doing what you need to be doing. And if you're lazy and don't feel like opening up two command prompts, that's the trick to doing it. And the start command I just mentioned, if you type start while you're in command prompt, it'll open up a new command prompt. Or if you do a start and then a period, it opens up in Explorer the folder that you're currently in. A start with two periods opens up the folder above the current one you're in. And a start with three opens up my computer. And doesn't sound like a lot, but I just learned that. I didn't realize what the start command did. And it'd be really handy when you're doing stuff and need to get to the folder and actually see what's in it graphically.
I never knew that. The start with, wow, that whole start with the dot trick, I've never heard of that. That's really interesting.
I'm definitely adding that to the repertoire. And that's all I found out about DOS, because I didn't really know what we were talking about until about 30 minutes before the show.
Me either. If I could add in just a little bit more about the multitasking.
Okay.
If you're back in a real-time DOS environment without any Windows, like, say, DOS 6 or 7 or something, well, let me rephrase that, MS-DOS 6.22 or something like that, there are multitaskers out there, and that will actually let you give you, you can have simultaneous running instances of programs, and you can task switch in between them. DRDOS 7 actually has the support. It comes with all the software you need to do this, and it's really handy. In fact, there's a little trick, I think I'm giving away a little bit of something we're going to cover on the packet sniffers in a future episode. I'll go ahead and say it here. DRDOS 7, you can actually go ahead and do task switching. And actually multitasking, not just task switching. It'll do task switching on 286, it'll do multitasking on 386 or above. And say you can open up a new job, a new background process, and say a little trick that I like to do is you can open up a new command.com session, and then you can redirect that out to a serial port. And if you happen to have a serial terminal out there, you can then have multiple users running on the same system. Now, this is only really useful if you have an application that'll run over that. And I'm currently doing some testing, and I believe WordPerfect is actually designed so that you can use it in this manner. I've actually got an old PC Magazine DOS Power Tools book that has you the instruction on how to make a simple little program in debug that'll let you run were perfect over your serial line and, say, out through your modem and on to another system remotely over the phone line. And it was kind of those weird things I stumbled across. I was like, man, this is just, like, far out.
Awesome.
I thought that was kind of cool.
All right, well, we're kind of running long on time here, buddy.
Oh, okay.
But cause we're trying to keep this short and quick, but let me mention a quick thing about the last episode. A lot of people wrote in and told us what that string was for in the Cat 5. I still say it's for strength. Strength makes sense. Maybe not just pulling strength, but when it's, like, hanging and it's suspended. Maybe that little string in there helps. Some people said it was part of the manufacturing process. Some people say it's still for cutting the sheath by pulling it back and cutting it, and, of course, the tampon string was pulled up also.
What'd you say, for cutting the cheese?
Cutting the sheath.
Okay.
And Cat 6 is also, each of the pairs are insulated. You have to cut them out of their own insulation to put them in the jack.
Oh. So last time we just said it was just the Cat 7, but it's the Cat 6 also.
Okay. Cat 6 does it too.
Great.
And I think that's all I got, buddy.
Excellent. Say, did I mention that we're not going to be the only hosts hosting? In fact, we're going to be absent for a couple days or weeks or so.
Something like that.
Yeah, we've got some other hosts that are actually going to be doing some other interesting things. Hopefully more interesting than what we've talked about.
Well, I've listened to one that's coming up, and they're definitely much more interesting than us.
Well, good.
And that's the trick. We're going to keep up with them now, though.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I guess is that it, then?
I think that's a twat, buddy.
All right. Episode 3 of Twat, signing off.
Later.